Welcome back to Mastering the Menopause Transition Summit. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Stills, and we've got a different kind of talk tonight that affects you, but we're going to be talking about, for those of you that are partnered, that have a male husband, about his health, because our partner's health affects our health. And if you are all here rocking your transition, we want to make sure you're bringing the fellas along with you. And so I love the title of this talk, and I can't take credit for it. My dear guest wrote it, but menopause can be hard, but is your husband? So that's a good one. And my guest is a dear friend and colleague. Her name's Dr. Sabrina Salt. She is also a naturopathic medical doctor. We come from the same alma mater, and she's located where I am in Scottsdale, Arizona. And she has been practicing regenerative and anti-aging medicine since 2013. And over the years, she's mastered various treatment modalities such as prolotherapy, PRP, adipose and bone marrow derived stem cells, as well as birth tissue biologics such as amniotic, allograft, and exosomes. She's known for crafting comprehensive and custom tailored treatment plans for her patients, which include things like diet and lifestyle changes, nutritional supplements, bioidentical hormones, peptide therapies, and of course, regenerative injections. In her free time, Dr. Salt enjoys reading, traveling, and spending time with her husband and two children. And she's got lots of information, but her children are adorable. So follow her for that, just so you can see how cute her kids are. So welcome, Sabrina. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Dr. Sharon. So excited to be here on your summit.
Yes, yes. And I'm excited to have you because this is kind of like a little bit of a different conversation that we're having here, but an important one because, you know, we are, as in some ways, we're only as healthy as those around us. And when we're in a relationship and someone's not feeling good, it really brings us down. And so we want to bring the men along with us. And so how did you, you know, for starters, how did this kind of become your niche that you were going to focus on men and erectile dysfunction?
Yeah, we can totally dive down that. I wanted to make a comment because you brought up something just right off the bat that's so fascinating. And I don't know if you've heard about this, but there's actually research that supports how when you are partnered up with someone for a long period of time, you actually end up sharing a microbiome.
Yes.
Isn't that fascinating? Mm-hmm. So yes, your health can actually be directly linked to your partner's based on yours or their microbiome and how they work together. But we don't have to jump down that rabbit hole right now.
I forgot about that study, but yes, that is very true.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. So anyway, about me. So like you said, I'm a naturopathic doctor. And yes, I've been working a lot with men's health recently. And of course, I started in the hormone industry, and a lot of the patients that were coming to see me were women who wanted to help, you know, they wanted to fix their hormones as they're going through the transition. Some women even pre-menopause, but a lot of them postmenopausal, going through all the changes that come along with it. Well, they started feeling really great. They started sending their husbands in. And what was really neat about working with the husbands is the transformation that I was able to see in these men when we were taking them from just feeling lackluster, no drive anymore, gaining some weight, not feeling as strong. And then this complete 180, you know, we see this all the time. We joke that we're jealous of this and how men are just such fast responders to anything. You know, they can just think about cutting cake out of their diet and lose 10 pounds, right? It's just like that in clinical practice. The transformations were incredible. And what I really started noticing beyond that was when men were coming in with more serious issues, things like heart issues, blood sugar issues, beyond just the hormones, and especially ED, when we were actually able to get them better, it was like there was a brand new man in front of me. And it was just amazing to see this over and over and over again. And I just started becoming obsessed with it, obsessed with just being the person that can catalyze a man into his fullest expression. Because I really do believe that a lot of things that are happening in the world currently are due to a lack of true masculinity, right? We hear this term thrown around all the time, toxic masculinity, et cetera, et cetera. But I really do think that there is room in this world for the fullest expression of that true masculine man to come through. And doing our part on the health side, I really do think leads into that in a really, really big way.
Mm. I love that. So powerful and so important. So yes, so this is the conversation we're going to have. And so if you are married or in a relationship with a man and he's nearby, go grab him if he's open. If not, grab your notepad and just start taking notes, because often, as Dr. Sabrina was saying, and I've seen over 20 years in clinical practice, the majority of men I treat are a husband of a patient, a brother of a patient, a son of a patient. There's some, but I can count them fairly easily who have like come on their own seeking help. It's usually us dragging them, right? The women are dragging them. So if you can drag someone right now to listen, great. If not, drag a notepad and take notes, because then you can share the information. So let's just start about, what is ED? Let's just define that. And why does it happen? What are the underlying causes?
So ED, we can just generally say, is any sort of dysfunction that happens throughout the course of sexual function, from getting an erection through maintaining the erection through any difficulties with ejaculation. And there are even some subclassifications within that have to do with even things like curvature of the penis. So basically anything that can go wrong during that process could be classified under ED. Now, some things that can cause it, very severe traumas, for example, that's one concern. When we're talking about in the context of just general health, we're going to be talking about the underlying factors that can contribute to this, just to kind of make this a more basic conversation, right? Well, otherwise we could get into the weeds with every single thing possible out there, right? So understanding that, to understand what can go wrong when it comes to erectile dysfunction, we have to first understand, well, what are the actual things that we need to maintain, to get an erection in the first place? And I kind of break it down to three different ingredients per se. First ingredient being, we need the adequate hormone conduction, right? We have to have that hormonal signaling that'll actually deliver the message that we need to achieve this erection. And that's usually mediated by the male hormone, which we will call testosterone, right? Where a lot of us are very, very familiar with that. Of course, this isn't the only hormone that comes into play, but it is a really, really big one, in the sense that levels that drop even below about 300 will actually lead to some degree of erectile dysfunction. And what's a criminal is that a lot of regular physicians won't even give a guy testosterone replacement until he's in the low 200s. So there can be a lot of suffering that happens in this intermediary phase. Not even being said, my personal preference for guys is usually between about 900 and 1100. So if we think about it, if a guy's going to his doctor, he's telling him he's not feeling well, maybe he's got some, intermittent ED. Maybe it's not all the time. Maybe it's just once in a while, he feels a little bit stressed. He can't completely follow through to completion, and he just kind of brushes it off. And his doctor's like, your testosterone's fine. It's sitting at 350. I think it's criminal, right? We could be doing so much better than that. So that's the first ingredient. Second ingredient is actually going to be adequate nerve conduction. So kind of how I was just mentioned with, sometimes guys, they get a little bit stressed out, a little bit harder to get to completion. And that's because, well, of course, stress can affect it as well, but you need your nervous system functioning properly. And your nervous system is actually going to function in two different ways when we're going from erection to completion. And the way that I like to describe it is point and shoot. And they're going to correspond to different parts of the nervous system. So the point part is going to be the actual erection part. And we think point, we think P, we think our parasympathetic nervous system. So we actually have to be able to get into the rest and digest state. This is our parasympathetic state. And so again, we have to be nice and relaxed. This is why it's super easy for a gentleman to wake up with morning wood, because they are in that rest of state, right? Mm-hmm. But then the body has to actually transition to the different part of the nervous system called the sympathetic nervous system, sympathetic S for shoot, to be able to actually go and move forward with ejaculation. This is where we actually see hiccups in, what we'll affectionately call whiskey, when guys have consumed too much alcohol, they've put too much of a stress on that parasympathetic part of their body. They're actually too rested that they can't completely go to completion when they've had something like excess alcohol that prevents them from going into that sympathetic state, right? Of course, this can be affected by whether or not you're on other types of medication too. Certain other things like SSRIs can impact this as well. But that's another aspect of our ingredients that we need. The final ingredient that we need is actually adequate blood flow. This one should be pretty obvious, right? We understand that there is a great deal of blood flow that happens when it gets engorged. That's how we create an erection. there are numerous things that can impact blood flow. And this is usually an area where we have to do a lot of digging into a guy's medical history, exposures to different things, because we need to figure out, well, where is this leak coming from, right? And a lot of the time we see underlying conditions like diabetes and heart disease will actually affect the blood flow part the greatest.
So yes, yes, and yes. I want to go back to testosterone and just kind of, because what you brought up is such a good point. Could you just kind of, for those that have their notepads, like what should they be asking their doctors for? Because it's more than just a testosterone.
It is so much more, yes, than just testosterone. We really do want to see how our hormones are working in harmony. So not only do you want to check to make sure your testosterone is good, but another thing that a lot of guys will actually miss is, what is your ratio of testosterone to your estrogen? Interesting thing, right? A guy might have normal estrogen levels, but really, really low testosterone. And all of a sudden now the ratio is thrown off, where he still might be developing what we call gynecomastia, or the, you know, more common term, man boobs, which we don't, you know, we don't necessarily want, but you know, that's one of the ways that can happen. It's not necessarily that you're making too much estrogen. It's that in a male body, these ratios are incorrect. Another thing that we usually like to look at is something called the sex hormone binding globulin. Now, sex hormone binding globulin, the way that I like to describe this, it's like the bus that drives testosterone around in your body. If there's a lot of those buses, it's binding up a lot of your testosterone. And when testosterone's riding the bus, it can't go to work, right? It's on the bus. It's completely bound up. So checking to see what those levels are at, because another thing, you might have high testosterone, but you also might have high sex hormone binding globulin, meaning you're not getting enough free testosterone freely available in the system. So then we talk about strategies on how we can work with that, such as reducing alcohol consumption, weightlifting, eating more protein. Those are usually the best things that we can do to actually bring that up naturally. In addition to that, I do actually like to even check guys' cortisol levels, again, the stress response. And what's interesting is I don't just check cortisol. I actually check a hormone called prolactin. Now, women might be listening to this and thinking, prolactin, I know what that is. That's the hormone that we release as females when we're lactating. And I'm certain, ladies, if your husband was lactating, he'd probably tell you. But if he's not, and it's so interesting, we see this pop up a lot on labs because it has a direct correlation with cortisol. So they get the hormone that signals the release of those comes from the same gland, and those two kind of travel together. The interesting thing is that with cortisol, it actually gets released at four different times throughout the day. So it's kind of pulsatile. When we check labs, we're getting one single reading from one point in time throughout the day. And that might not be the time of day that cortisol is misbehaving. But if we do that test and we see that the prolactin is elevated, we can actually extrapolate that the cortisol is haywire at some other point throughout the day. And we actually need to work with that. So this has been a really, really useful tool for me for figuring out, hey, is stress an issue with you? Is this cortisol rhythm something that we need to work on? The other option is you can just actually run the four times a day salivary cortisol test. But I do find a lot of people just aren't usually game for spitting in a tube four times a day. This is usually a lot easier for us. Addition to all of that, I usually love to check thyroid function as well. Underfunctioning thyroid can have a whole host of problems with it. And it can definitely, I mean, it's going to affect energy. It's going to just even affect how your skin looks. It's going to affect your digestion. There's a lot of things there that we need to unpack. We also like to check things like fasting insulin, hemoglobin A1C, blood sugar. Again, that's that other ingredient for our erections, which is our blood sugar management. And that's how it's affecting the blood flow. Okay. That's what that one's doing. In addition to that, I also like to do prostate checks. So PSAs. So we want to make sure that we aren't going to be giving a gentleman any testosterone if there is any sort of red flags in the prostate arena. And this isn't because the testosterone causes prostate issues, but there is the possibility that if some sort of prostate cancer, some sort of prostate issue was developing, that the testosterone could potentially exacerbate it. In addition to that, this is another thing. We of course like to run cholesterol levels. Cholesterol is one of those things that I feel like has been so demonized in the medical space for we can get on a soapbox here. Cholesterol is not as bad as they say it is. We have to know what the cholesterol is doing to be able to determine if it is actually a problem. So of course you run a normal cholesterol panel, which is going to look at things like our LDL, which is our quote unquote bad cholesterol, our HDL, which is our quote unquote good cholesterol. And then of course our triglycerides, which is probably the most menacing thing on that panel because it's literally just a fat bound to a sugar, right? So when we're looking at that and we're seeing something like an LDL, a lot of other doctors will freak out if the LDL is super, super high because they think, oh my gosh, this definitely means that you have plaque in your arteries. This definitely means that you're going to have a heart attack. We got to get you on statins. We got to XYZ the whole down the road. And oh my gosh, and especially if your blood pressure might be slightly elevated, it's just, oh, hell is going to break loose, right? But that's not necessarily the case. A lot of times I'll do kind of a couple steps further than that. And I'll actually run something called the oxidative LDL. And it's to check to see if the LDL is in its oxidative form, which is its bad form. Or I'll actually go another step further than that and check for inflammatory markers, something like the HS or the high sensitivity CRP or C-reactive protein. And this will tell us if there is any one generalized inflammation in the body or two cardiac inflammation in the body. So hope that's a lot of stuff. I know.
I
try to be super thorough.
We do a lot of tests, right?
We do. And you know, the cool thing about that is that, you know, a panel like that, you know, you're thinking, oh my gosh, there's all this stuff, a lot of great data, really only under $200, you know? So that's of course working with, you know, me and Scott Still, but it's really quite affordable. If you think about, you know, you go to your regular doctor by the time you're done with things like copays and whatnot, we can get all this data for a really, really great price. And it tells us so much about what's going on under the hood.
Well, and most primary cares are just going to run a testosterone. They'll run the PSA, but they're not going to run a free testosterone. They're probably not going to run estradiol. They're definitely not going to run prolactin.
No.
we women seem to have the real estate on thyroid disease, but men have thyroid problems too. And so that's a misconception that it's hypothyroidism is a women's issue. We can share that with the men, unfortunately. And so you can just see that there's so many things that go into your men's health, just like there is that go into our health as women. So for women listening, I guess now let's take it to a little different place. Like, how do you notice in your man? How do you talk to him? Because this is, I think as women, we're a lot more comfortable saying, I just don't feel like having sex. But I think men are so, it's such a part of their persona that it can be very embarrassing.
Yeah, I think so. This conversation, I think we have to kind of set the stage, right? Because this is a conversation that, if you're having this with your husband, it should be at a time where it is away from the actual act, right? You're not going to be initiating this while he's initiating, that this is maybe a planned thing. And that it's of course being done in the context of an otherwise healthy marriage. I just need to, you know, preemptively say that if you are in a marriage where you feel unsafe, or if there's any of those issues, that there should be other steps that you should take before going into a conversation like this. So just for full safety and full transparency, that's what I want to lead with. So that all being said, if this is, you know, otherwise very happy, very healthy, very on the same page marriage, honestly, ladies, the first thing that you can do is just one, lead by example, and two, lead with love. I find that your partners are going to be so receptive to you wanting to do the best thing for them because, and this is going to sound pretty crazy, they want what's best for you too, right? It's so interesting. I know, at least in my marriage, my husband is always trying to do what is best for me. And I find that we're happier when we're both equally trying to serve and to pay attention to each other and trying to do the good things for each other. So a couple of things that you might notice in your marriage, if this is something that's affecting your husband. One, you might notice that there's a change in his appetite, okay? So when the body starts getting low on energy, it's gonna start going for quick energy. So he might be going more for the sweets, more for the salty things, more for that like quick convenience food. And he might be eating at different times and he might be eating more. So that's one thing to pay attention to. Where is he getting his fuel from? Another thing, how is he at the end of the day and how is he first thing in the morning? At the end of the day, is he tired? Is he sluggish? Is it hard to hold a conversation with him? Is he just not quite present with you? There could be something else going on too, right? That's a good indication that maybe his testosterone isn't keeping up. He's not able to just again, fully engage with you and be present with you. same thing for the first thing in the morning. Is he struggling getting out of bed? Is he hitting the snooze button multiple times? Maybe his thyroid isn't getting up in the morning. Maybe his cortisol is actually really, really low at that time. And he's supposed to be getting what we call the cortisol awakening response. And it's just not coming, right? Is he still going out with friends? Is he still participating in the hobbies? A lot of these things are going to be behavioral things that you're going to notice, because guess what? He's probably not going to tell you how he's feeling. He's just not. Guys, really, there are exceptions to this rule, I will say, but for the most part, he's not going to tell you how he's feeling. You're going to have to rely on your sleuthiness and looking at what are the behaviors that are happening. And once you, you know, if you are paying attention to these, you, if you're like, yes, this is my husband, like you, if you know, you know, you've seen this, you've been going through this, it's not his fault. This is another thing that I want to preface this with. If you are noticing these changes, honey, he is not doing it to you. It just is. He is going through something. He's not trying to pay attention to you. He's not trying to pull his weight around the house. He's not doing it to you. It just is. So this is the best opportunity where you can tell, like even just gently suggest it, that, hey, maybe you should go get your hormones checked. And it's so funny because a lot of time, you know, guys, they actually get excited about the idea of being on testosterone, because they've seen the bodybuilders, they've heard about it in TV shows, they've heard about it in movies. And to them, it's like, oh, wow, yeah, I might be a candidate for this. I could feel better. Perfect. Let's go. And so it can become easier at that. Now, that all being said, there has to be another layer that happens too, which is, what are the things that you have to do as a couple to foster a more healthy lifestyle for the both of you? So what can this look like? This might look like, maybe you reduce how much you go out to eat. Maybe you don't consume alcohol when you do go out to eat. Maybe you just stop keeping alcohol in the house. Maybe you really start paying attention to what kind of snack foods are coming into our home, and really eliminating what's going to be, again, going into your bodies. Because let's be honest, as we get older, it gets harder to be healthier. And I almost feel like every decision that we make, it's either going to lead us towards health or lead us towards disease. And more so, again, as we're getting older. So this is something you get to do together. I think it's going to be a lot easier to, again, have that conversation with him.
Absolutely. It's always, I think of it as just this continuum, and you're standing here and here's health and here's disease, and every thought, every action, every food moves you one way or the other.
Nailed it.
And there's only two options. So those are great, great tips. What about just environmental, and how does toxins play a role in erectile dysfunction? And I don't think we actually have said the word andropause. But you know, everyone knows about menopause, but men go through something similar called andropause. And we as physicians know about it because we maybe get a little blip about it, but it's a real thing.
It is a real thing. And you know, there is this, I wouldn't even say the misnomer, but everyone says, you know, men keep their virility or their ability to conceive children throughout their whole lives. Well, that's true, but that doesn't mean that their actual testosterone production and their male hormone production stays up the whole time. Do some men? Yes, but it is very, very few and far between where I see men who are into their even 50s and 60s who maintain high, if not barely adequate testosterone levels. It is usually the norm to see it go down. And it is, like you said, because of that andropause.
I had recently, like maybe in the last 6 months, I had a patient in his 70s who had normal testosterone. And I was like, are you sure you're not getting tested? Like, I was like, wow, I rarely see this. It was, yep. I was like, you must have good stock genes there.
Yes. Well, but like you were also saying, there's the environmental toxins too, right? So where do we even start with environmental toxins? I mean, it becomes so I don't want to say funny, this is not necessarily funny, but it's almost entertaining just how pervasive these toxins are in our literally everywhere, right? I mean, women, did you know that some of the yoga pants you wear contain things called forever chemicals that actually make their way into your skin and slowly poison you over time? I know, I'm sorry, I just lost you probably about 1,000 viewers just by saying that. I'm sorry.
We're all going and emptying out our closets now.
But it really is that bad. And I don't say that to, you know, be overly dramatic, but to really just drive the point home that I mean, we are living in such a toxic environment, and it becomes, you know, and again, as we're getting older, it becomes a lot harder for our bodies to keep up with those detoxification demands. And unless you're doing things like daily saunas, or, you know, really avoiding things like the alcohol or those purposeful toxicants, we'll call those purposeful toxicants, that'll put that extra burden on the body. You know, a lot of us, we, you know, if you run like a tox burden test, we're going to show up pretty bad. But for men, there are a few things that I will say that we should definitely go over, and not even necessarily toxins. So the first one that I like to bring up that always surprises a lot of people that could be a boner killer is actually mouthwash. A lot of people don't know this, and it's really crazy. It always blows people's minds, but yes, mouthwash, because what happens is that mouthwash will actually kill off some of the beneficial bacteria in the mouth that are responsible for producing something called nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is actually the molecule that causes the relaxation in the blood vessels to allow for adequate blood flow. So we can see how that connection can happen, right? As above, so below sort of thing. So while not necessarily a toxin per se, it can be toxic to that pathway leading to erectile dysfunction. That's a really big one. And then, oh my gosh.
And I think most mouthwashes, you know, they're blue and they're green. And so we can put them in the toxic category.
Yeah.
I'm still kind of reeling about the yoga pants.
The yoga pants are the worst. Those PFAs, I can't, for the life of me, I cannot pronounce what the actual name is. But if, you know, anybody's listening, pops what are PFAs into Google, you will find out that these are the forever chemicals that your body can't actually get rid of. So that's a really big deal. And so it's not even just yoga pants, ladies. It's actually things like waterproof mascara, certain makeups. Yeah.
Let's go back to the boner killers.
I know. I'm sorry.
We've talked a lot about toxins. I want the women to take a break. Let's focus on the men.
We'll go back to the boners. So for men, there are other things too that can impact this. And again, a lot of the things that can cause these impacts are things that are attacking one or more of those three ingredients that we talked about: blood flow, hormones, nerves. Alcohol is actually another big one for men. So certain alcohol is worse, like beer, right? So beer is going to be made from a lot of grains, which are going to have possible phytoestrogenic compounds to it, which is going to throw off hormones. But even then, we also get the alcohol impact on our nervous system function. And of course, we get that alcohol that actually causes damage to our blood vessels as well. So that's like a 3-in-1. That's probably one of the worst ones that's out there for sure. And then of course, we like to have the conversation about our diet. So I'm personally a proponent of we'll call it a pseudo carnivore diet, meaning greater than 70% of calories coming from animal-based products. So think steak, chicken, eggs, whatnot. And a lot of the guys are like, hold on a second. I'm going to come to you. We're going to get my testosterone up. We're going to fix my ED, and I don't have to eat a vegetable. Like, sign me up. Yes, you can do all of this without eating a single vegetable.
Yes. So I you know, we follow each other on Instagram, and I'm always drooling. There's the bacon.
So much steak in my house. There's all.
And so what, I'm curious, because I was going to ask you about this. So what is the other 30%?
So it's mainly animal based. And I say 30% is like a minimum, but I will tell you, on most days, I'm usually 90% or more. I might eat a couple pieces of fruit, but that's pretty much it. I have coffee. So that makes up a little bit of the other part as well. But like today, for example, I had 1.5 New York strips. I had some plain full fat yogurt, and I had butter on top of those. I had coffee with like an organic heavy cream and some bacon. And that's what I ate today.
And you look good.
Yeah. And I feel good too. But so when it comes to guys and their diet, so the whole cholesterol thing, we already talked about, that's a complete myth. So you're not going to completely blow up your arteries going and trying this animal-based diet. That being said, there are certain cases where maybe I wouldn't recommend this, or I wouldn't recommend this as like balls to the wall right away. But definitely, like, especially if you have any serious cardiac concerns, might be something that we'd have to discuss in an actual consultation. But that being said, at the bare minimum, we are fully anti-vegetable, anti-nut, and anti-seed, simply because of all of the lectins, phytates, and oxalates that are present in these. Simply put, these are what we call anti-nutrients. And for most people, there is a greater cost to consuming those than there is a benefit that you get from the thing that you're consuming, okay? So we can also say that every single plant in the plant kingdom exists on a spectrum of toxicity. This is 1000% true. Spectrum of toxicity. Some of them very, 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 very low toxicity. Some of them very, very, very high toxicity, right? And then some fall right in the middle, right? Like poison ivy. You touch it on your skin, you're not going to be happy for a couple of days, but it's certainly not going to kill you, right? But you definitely wouldn't want to eat it. Now, humans, we exist on a spectrum of tolerance. Some people can really tolerate this stuff super well, and it's not going to cause them any problems, which I think is great. Clearly, we operate these meat suits that are designed to eliminate stuff, right? We have kidneys, livers, colon, urine, bladders, all these things designed to get things out in addition to our skin. So clearly we can eliminate things. However, when we end up in a meat suit that has disease and dysfunction, we actually lose the privilege to eat whatever we want, because now we have to fuel it to actually heal the disease instead of just eating. Okay. And so this is where we talk about these really, we'll call them extreme diet changes, because, you know, the Ron Swanson thing, I think, is kind of funny. If people have seen that, you know, he gets a plate of salad. Oh, you've actually accidentally given me the food that my food eats. But again, if we're in a disease state, we sometimes have to eat in a very specific fashion to get us out of the disease state. Doesn't mean that you'll never be able to eat some of these things ever again, but it does mean that while you're here, you got to work with it, right? So
this, controversial. You just said vegetables are, I got to stop you, because I'm sure...
People are losing their minds.
So I first, I guess one of the questions would be that I would think you would hear a lot is fiber. What about fiber?
So there's a whole, so another doctor that I know that I'm friends with, Dr. Robert Kiltz, he's actually a reproductive endocrinologist up in New York. Fantastic human. He actually has a whole write-up on his website that I can actually gives you to look at, because it's a duty time of the fiber myth.
Wait, hold on 1 second.
We need fiber.
You just like
froze. Yes.
So
am I here now?
Now you're here. So start again with, I'll just say, what about fiber, and we'll have them edit up.
Yes.
So people, I would think, I mean, this is so controversial. I got a few questions that I'm sure women are like, we got to ask this, but they can't. So I'll ask it for you. I'm pretty sure I know what you're thinking. So yes. First, what about fiber?
Yes. And I'm going to send you a link to this, because a colleague of mine, Dr. Robert Kiltz, he's actually a reproductive endocrinologist up in New York. He has a whole big write-up on his website that dives into this in detail and does it way more justice than I can do in a couple minutes here. Short version, it's a myth. We don't need fiber. You can have completely perfect poops without it. In addition, there's actually a PubMed study that I can send you where they actually cured constipation on a no fiber diet.
So, ta-da. So what did you say? You said vegetables were toxic. Was that, or not healthy, or what? I don't want to.
So every plant exists on a spectrum of toxicity, right? Cabbage actually contains 49 known carcinogens. Now, of course, they're not in super, super high quantities that it's going to certainly give you cancer in one go of, you know, some sauerkraut or whatever. But it's exposure over time. And it's also exposure for what type of body you have. Again, a healthy person, you can probably process this. In a person who is in a disease state, for example, I'll give you a really, really great example. This is something that I've actually seen multiple times in my practice. And it's the woman who comes to me with joint pain all over her body, not long after starting a brand new healthy lifestyle where she starts juicing kale and spinach. Or blending kale and spinach. It's the oxalates, it's depositing in her joints, right? So now, that all being said, raw vegetables are definitely going to be the worst, because you are getting these poisons in their raw state. Cooking them will remove a lot of them, but they're still going to be present. And again, if you're a healthy person, it probably doesn't bother you. I'll tell you, I haven't had a meaningful vegetable in probably 7 or 8 months. Wow. Just haven't. And the first thing that I used to literally eat a salad every single day, like every day. I would go to Salad and Go. You know Salad and Go. You're in Arizona. If you're in Arizona, you know Salad and Go, right? best deal ever, like $6 for an organic salad with chicken, sold, right? So I stopped eating these salads and I had this like little belly pooch that just never went away after having two kids. It was gone in like no time, just gone. Okay, that was cool. And then, so my husband started doing this diet first and I was actually so against it because I'm a really good ND and I was brainwashed into vegetables, right? So of course, the more vegetables, the better. And I'm watching him and I'm thinking, you're absolutely insane. I don't know what you're doing. You're going to kill yourself. You're going to never poop again. Like the fiber thing. I was into the fiber thing too. But then his skin got better. His eyes got whiter. He was like more even keel. He's already a pretty even keel dude, but he was like more even keel. Like he didn't need coffee anymore. He just like off coffee, cold turkey. I was like, there's something to this. Like, again, I was watching my husband's habits in a different way. I was watching how he was actually improving. So I'm like, all right, I have to experiment. So I cut out the salads first and then I kind of did my slow descent into it. And then I finally removed white rice, finally removed oats. And now like I just told you what my diet was, that's pretty much my diet on any average day with maybe the addition of like some berries. So yeah, it's been.
But wait, I thought we force our kids to eat their veggie.
So it's so funny. My oldest, she was raised eating her veggies. We don't make them eat veggies anymore. And our youngest, he's about 18, 19 months. And he is like a full-on carnivore baby. My husband has these videos of him just like gnawing on ribs. Like, and so here's the crazy thing, right? The other day, and this has happened more than once, we'll give him the option of fruit or meat. He picks the meat every single time. There's been instances where he'd like start to eat the fruit and we'll see the meat and we'll spit it out. And it just goes to show, okay, so here's, this is going to be a bold statement, but human beings are the only animals that are dumb enough to need a study to tell us what to eat. Like that lion in nature does not need to be told that he should eat the gazelle instead of like a tree, like, or a leaf or something. Right. But human, and here's the, and if and a human being generally was dropped off in the woods, they'd probably try to go and hunt something first before nibbling on a leaf. Right. So we think about, well, where did we come from ancestrally? And there is a very, very big, you know, conversation that you can have as far as, are we actually obligate carnivores? And again, stomach pH, our incisors, like there is a lot for that, including like nitrogen dating that's been done on human remains from thousands and thousands of years ago, right? It says that we were carnivores. So if we're sitting here, and I think we have the ability to eat plants because I don't think that there was always a meat available at every single time. And I think plants are more of a survival food versus a thrival food. You know, meat, for example, has many nutrients in it that we can't get anywhere else, like a lot of B12, taurine, carnitine, these are all present in meat that are essential for our bodies that, you know, thankfully we live in a world right now where we have the luxury of being able to supplement our diet if we choose to not eat meat. But ultimately, where would we have gotten that, right? I mean, you know, vegans would have died out, you know, if this was, you wouldn't have had the privilege of being able to choose that as a lifestyle.
Mm. I've been wanting to have this conversation with you. I didn't know we were going to have it on air. So ladies, I'm learning along with you because I've been watching you and I've been like, this is interesting. And I'm thinking about my granddaughter who I always say she's a carnivore. She loves meat, meaties. Yes. And you know, the other day I'm like, you know, come on, eat the broccoli. And she's like, meaties, and doesn't want to eat the broccoli. And I'm like, come on, the broccoli's good. And she, I mean, she also does like a mean cookie. I don't know if she'd choose meat over the cookie, but she definitely has always, I mean, she loves protein. And I, you know, and I just think about all of us and grow, you know, eat your veggies. Now, what about someone like me as you're talking about this? Because I love high protein, but I, when you were like talking about the cabbage, I'm like, I love cabbage and I love broccoli. So is it from this perspective, can you still eat it? Or is it really that, you know, it's
so funny.
It's such a total.
So I made a post not too long ago about this sort of thing. And the way that I kind of explained it was that vegetables to a lot of us are basically Stockholm syndrome. So if we think about it, as a kid, we're disgusted by them. We hate them, you know, as if they're our captors, right? Like we're being held captive by these vegetables and we're disgusted by them. We hate them. We don't want anything to do with them. And then it's over time we get broken down and now we love our vegetables and and I'm like, but would you actually truly miss these vegetables if you weren't eating them? And here's the other thing too. I thought that I would miss it too. I really thought that I would like need my salads and that I would so miss these flavors. But now knowing how good I feel without them, and like I've tested it a couple times just to see, like, that's why I say I haven't eaten like a meaningful vegetable in a really long time. I've tested it because I wanted to see, like, did I actually feel that bad? And I did. The bloating was instant. My like joint pain came back. Like I would get like the upper back, like the knots and like the discomfort that went away a lot. I would need to go see the chiropractor less, believe it or not. Like I needed less adjustments because I was taking in, I think, less toxins. And, you know, this conversation kind of went into this regard, but I want this to be a conversation for both men and women that are watching this, that there might be something to this. And if you are one of those people that has been on iteration of a quote unquote healthy diet, and you're still not feeling great, maybe it's the healthy diet that's doing it to you. Like maybe it's the vegetables. Like the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And it's like, man, how many times do you have to double down on vegetables before you're just bust? You know, try just cutting the vegetables. We really can survive on just meat. Like there is no nutrient that you will miss if you do an all meat diet. I'm not saying you do need to do it. That's about as extreme as you can get. We call it the lion diet, you know, meat, salt, water. You don't got to do that. Like I said, I classify myself as, you know, hyper carnivore. So greater than 70% of my calories coming from animal based products. So steak, that also includes eggs, also includes butter, also includes things like, you know, heavy cream in my coffee. But yeah, for the rest of it, it's, you know, small pieces of fruit berries. So it's so funny. I was an admitted chocolate addict. I thought that I could not live without chocolate. And so I'd be like, oh, I'm just going to treat myself to a little bit because I'm used to it. And I would get the like 70% dark organic stuff, you know, the bougie chocolate, right? And it would mess up my sleep. I am now seeing just how bad chocolate was for me by isolating it like this. Mm. So could you? Yes. May you find that it doesn't work for you?
Sure.
Possibly.
I'm stuck on, I do truly like broccoli and cabbage, but I could probably give up a lot of other veggies. This is such a different way of thinking, but you know, that's what we're doing. We're showing that there's so many different ways to health, and so much of what we have been taught can be false.
Well, and here's the other thing too. It's all a grand experiment. Like none of us really know what we're doing and none of us are getting out alive. So why not experiment while you're here, especially if what you're doing isn't giving you the results that you want. And that's my biggest thing. Like do what gives you results. It shouldn't be complicated. It shouldn't be rocket science. And if you can't get the results that you're looking for, work with a provider that you think can get you there too. But ultimately, do what works for you. So if somebody is completely happy eating vegetables, like I will never rip you from the arms of kale. I just won't, right? You can stay with your like bed of broccoli, like whatever it is that makes you happy, go for it. But if it's not, if you are not getting the results that you want, entertain something else, even if it goes against everything you have been made to believe in your entire life.
Yeah, because
I mean, doctors used to bloodlet, right? So why are like doctors aren't infallible? And you know, and that's just this other thing too, that it's like, oh, this idea that you know, somebody went to med school and they're a doctor and that makes what they're saying accurate. Well, no, I can be completely full of shit. Like you're not gonna know until you test it for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that we are the greatest laboratory, right? Our own bodies, and yeah. I have watched you because, you know, doing it, and it's been pretty interesting. And, you know, and I see you looking great, feeling great, you know, your markers turning around, and it goes against everything we believe.
So. And that's the thing. I share my labs because I have nothing to hide. Like if I'm telling you guys I'm doing something, I'm not going to be like, oh, it's so working so well. And then like secretly I'm like, oh crap, I don't feel great. Right. Like I'm going to show you like, this is true, real objective data that says my cholesterol's fine. My inflammatory markers are fine. My insulin's fine. My blood sugar's fine. Like all the things that are impacted by your diet and lifestyle are doing better.
So we definitely tangented there.
We did, but this is, I think this is, it's an important conversation because this type of diet is what I do. I talk to men about this to actually help with their ED. So it's an important, I think we did good going here.
Yeah. So anything else about the, what do you call them? The boner busters?
Well, yeah. So I can give you a download and I have a whole thing and it's called the top 10 boner killers hiding in your home. So we can make that available for your audience to download. Yeah. I think it's pretty entertaining. And it's, you know, it's things that you might not be thinking of. And it does actually dive into the science behind why this is affecting it. And I do link a bunch of studies in there too, if you are just as nerdy as I am.
We love the nerdy. So, wow, this has been, I'm going to go into an existential crisis now.
I gotta go. Join me on the other side. We have steak.
I'm going to go look, you know, because I eat a paleo diet. So it's veggies and protein.
But if it's working for you right now for all of your goals and you feel perfectly fine, don't change. Right. But if there's just a little, if there's like room for more and you're like a little bit curious.
I have been so intrigued. Trust me.
Give yourself 30 days. Okay. And in those 30 days, it's not going to be long enough to cause damage by doing just carnivore, but it will be long enough to see changes, positive changes. So I always tell you, do that. And if you like how you feel at the end of 30 days, do another 30, right? Just commit to that. And again, make it your own. Like it is an experiment. We're all just out here.
And there's books written, right? Like if someone's like, this is intriguing, are there books you can recommend or?
Dr. Sean Baker wrote The Carnivore Diet. Dr. Paul Saladino wrote, I think it's called The Carnivore Code. Judy Cho is a dietitian. She wrote The Carnivore Cure, I believe. There's a lot out there. Dr. Paul Saladino's book, I read that one and he actually goes like into really, really deep detail about plant anti-nutrients. So if that's something that you're really interested in learning more about, that's a solid one. All those doctors that I just mentioned, they all have pretty big YouTube channels, following like lots of great information. Dr. Ken Berry is another one. He is another doctor that promotes this type of diet and lifestyle. Dr. Anthony Chafee, they all have
YouTube channels. And you have a great Facebook group, Carnivore.
Yeah. So our Facebook group, my husband and I run it and we offer just basically help and coaching in that group. And it's called Carnivore Harder, Happier, Healthier. Harder, Happier, Healthier is our brand for our men's health outreach as well too. So it's kind of like our offshoot for that, but men and women are welcome in there. We actually have a lot of women in there. It's a fast growing group and yeah, everybody's welcome. And one thing that I like about this group is that it's kind. We were in some other carnivore groups and people got really dogmatic about their beliefs. People were kind of bullies. We really try to make this environment so welcoming so that wherever you're at, wherever your starting point is, like you're welcome here. You know, you can sit with us, like it's totally cool. And we're going to help you. And we're going to, you know, help you with resources. We're going to help you with food ideas. We're going to, wherever, if you're running into a hiccup, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, my poop is really weird in these first couple of weeks of transition. You know, maybe you shouldn't trust that fart. That's the place to come and talk about it. Like we're totally open. It is a great group. So yeah, just search us Carnivore Harder, Happier, Healthier.
Awesome. Well, this was fun.
Yes, it was. It was
fun. A lot of, you know, from testing to
we dove into a lot.
Fiber to veggies to toxins to mouthwash to yoga pants. Like there's a lot to digest here. You're just a wealth of information and always a joy to talk to. So thank you. Thank you so much for being here and for sharing and for certainly shaking things up a little.
My pleasure.
You know, and there's so many roads home. When you think about religions, there's so many roads to health. And so perhaps the carnivore is your road and, you know, explore. And especially, you know, it's, you're living proof. So I can vouch for that. So all right, ladies, mind blown, mic drop. I'm going to go exhale, breathe, go ground on the earth and just kind of take in
your steak for tomorrow.
Maybe go hold my broccoli and have a talk with
break up with broccoli. Hashtag break up with broccoli. I like this. Ladies, if you're listening to this right now, hashtag break up with broccoli. This is going to be our hashtag on social. Do it. Tag us when you break up with broccoli.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Bye, everyone.